This is Unleashing Your Great Work, a podcast about doing the work that matters the most to you. I'm Dr. Amanda Kroll, a cognitive psychologist and the author of the book, Great Work. Every week on this podcast, we make bold plans and we take small steps, all so we can build a life that's powered by your great work. Welcome, everybody, to Unleashing Your Great Work. Today, I'm super excited to have Robin J. Emden, aka the Procrastination Slayer, hosts of the Goal Busters podcast and who the creator of Get Resultsology, the science of getting stuff done, a system that helps solopreneurs beat procrastination and follow through without burning out. A facepalm moment in 2019, taking 10 years to finish a six-year home study degree, sparked a three-year deep dive into academic studies and science-backed books on procrastination. Today, Robin helps clients achieve up to 33% more of their goals using brain science, not willpower. His mantra, do it today, profit tomorrow, and repeat. Welcome to the podcast, Robin.
Hello, and thank you very much for having me on the podcast.
We are very excited to hear all about your journey through procrastination, a topic that's very near and dear to myself and the listeners of this podcast. Sometimes we talk about being a congenital procrastinator. It's like, is this like a born trait? Like, what is happening? So I'm sure we'll have lots to talk through today.
Yes, absolutely.
All right. So why don't we start where we always do? Tell us, Robin, a little bit about your great work.
Okay. So I guess you wouldn't expect someone who's written a book called Get Resultsology to start with the detail. I go for the results. So the result of my great work, what I'm really looking for, where this all came from, is I have been a lifelong searcher for something that maybe one of two of your listeners are a lifelong searcher for too, which is lifestyle freedom, the freedom to live the life you want as you want it on your own terms. And in order to do that, you need cash, enough cash to give you the lifestyle freedom you want. You need time, not always working every hour God sends you, but having time to spend time on the things that really matter to you, friends, family, hobbies, vacations, sleeping. All of those things are things we value, and health, and the ability to maintain good health, pursue better health, and pay for better health care as well. In my country, we have the NHS, but that has its limits, and there are things that you can do that are not covered by the NHS because they're about self-help and looking after yourself. So my passion really began when I was in the retail industry. I grew up in a family business in the retail industry, right from a little boy through to the late 1990s, when I realized that I wasn't living my passion. Mm-hmm. I realized that working in a retail business, which was the British will understand if I say a new phrase for non-British audiences, I used to sell grot to the grockles, which in English is that we sold tourist-related souvenirs to tourists.
Ah, okay.
But in my part of the world, tourists are fondly known as grockles, and the stuff I was selling was rubbish, trash, rot, right? It had no function other than, I've been to that place, or just something that collects dust on your shelf. And I say that in a fairly jaded way because I was jaded about it. I remember I don't watch soaps on TV, but I was flicking the channels one night. I do like watching TV, and I was flicking the channels, and a soap came on, and it was an Australian one, and the couple was stood in their shop, and they were arguing, and they were a married couple, and the woman was saying, "So why don't you love me anymore?" And the man is saying, "Of course I love you. Of course I love you. Well, why are you getting on a yacht then and sailing around the world without me for a whole year?" And he said, "It's just something I have to do. I really have to do. It's got nothing to do with the fact that I don't love you anymore. In fact, you're my world. Of course you are. But I want to see the world as well." And she said, I don't understand. He said, "Look, it's very simple. I can't imagine dying and getting to the pearly gates and being greeted by St. Peter and saying, come in. And me saying, no, please just give me one more day in the shop." It is like, that hit me really. Still remember that. I was like, that's me. I can't imagine living my whole life and going, oh, yeah, I just do another day selling grot to the grockles. That immediately triggered in me a realization I wasn't living my life purpose. It wasn't my great work. Mm. It was something that I couldn't do anymore. And so it was a family business. Over the next few years, we got it sold, and I retrained. I went to California. I got an invitation from the Tony Robbins and his people to go and train as a coach, having gone through all of his programs, with a view to getting a job working for him. Then his plans changed, my plans changed, not least because I had a young family back here in the UK. And mm-hmm. in those days, there was remote working was possible. We had Skype, remember that? But it wasn't a feature of what he was yet offering. So I set up my own business back here in the UK, did that for 2 or 3 years, and then became a full-time single parent. And all the time I was driven then by my coaching by, look, I want to help people get more cash, profit, turnover, whatever you call it. It's cash. It's money in your bank account. Yeah. It's money you can spend. Time freedom, because money without time freedom is not much help. And health freedom, because if you don't have your health, you don't have anything. And I've always been focused on how do I get those things for myself? And because I come from a place of service, how can I get those things for people that I really want to serve? How can I get that for others?
That makes sense. So how did you go from, sounds like there's a bit of history between going to California and training with Tony Robbins and our story today where you have your own system, because it doesn't sound like you're still doing the Tony Robbins sort of coaching model for yourself. Why did we go from Tony Robbins to Get Resultsology? Like what's the story arc of that transition?
Sure. So it's actually not a long story. And although I can talk for England, I'm obviously English and I can talk for England. So if I waffle on too long, do jump in, but I'll tell it to you in fairly simplistic terms. So, because it's a simple enough story. So I was actually sat in a coffee shop in 2019, having a coffee with my older brother. In the intervening years, I'd put the coaching down in the early 2000s when I became a full-time single parent. I did other things working for myself. I've always worked for myself. I did a little bit of working for other people. Was never good at that because I don't like having a boss. I like to look in the mirror in the morning and it's the boss looking back. I mean, he's a lunatic, but he's my lunatic. He's my boss.
Yeah.
And I've always been my own boss, but with a couple of years back in the early 2000s after I, you know, became a full-time dad. But 2019. So what have I done in that time? Well, one of the things I did, and I was bragging about it in the coffee shop, was I was bragging to my brother, I got my degree. I finished my education, something I wasn't allowed to do when I was younger because I had to go into the family business. But I finally got my degree. It was an arts and humanities degree in psychology and philosophy and history. I love history. And I was really pleased with myself. And my brother was, oh, I'm so bored, you know, tell me something interesting. I thought, oh, yeah, that's siblings for you. God, goodness me. So I thought, oh, I know, he'll like this. So I said, trust me to take 10 years to do something I should have done in 6, because it takes 6 years to get a degree working from home part-time. And he went, oh, yeah, why was that? And I went, oh, yeah, okay, you liked that, didn't you? And I laughed and I said, oh, you know, procrastination. And we changed the subject and carried on talking about something else. And then on the way home, some pennies started to fall. And I was like, wait a minute, you're a trained life coach. How dare you procrastinate? What are you talking about, Robin? You're not supposed to procrastinate. Your clients never procrastinated. I never let them procrastinate. And I thought, well, hang on, something wrong with that picture. And I really need to square that circle because that's just wrong. That's plain wrong. Why do I procrastinate? And then I asked two other quality questions that a coach would ask oneself and their clients, which was, where else in your life does this procrastination thingy turn up? And the other question was, well, what does it cost you? Well, the answer to the first one was, crikey, absolutely every area of my life. Mm-hmm. Often not particularly important or serious, but actually, when I started thinking about the costs, sometimes very important. By the time I got home, I was incredibly angry with myself and very, very upset thinking about the cost to relationships, to finances, to career. Every aspect of my life, it had permeated through and influenced. And I realized there's a difference between regular, what I call regular procrastination. We all do that a little bit. Should I wash the dishes after dinner or should I leave them till the morning? Yeah, well, it's probably not going to change the world if I leave them till the morning. It's not serious. It's rarely life-changing unless you've got food poisoning off them, which is a bit radical of a thought, I suppose. But then there's chronic procrastination. And when I was looking at the research into that, they found that 95% of us will admit to procrastinating a little bit sometimes. Mm-hmm. But of those 95%, 1 in 5, 20% of those are chronic procrastinators. And that's serious. That's when it's life-changing. And that's what I had. That's what I did. Yeah. That was my behavior. And you mentioned it in the introduction. It was a literal facepalm moment. What have I done? Oh my goodness. What have I done? And it wasn't new. It was a decades old problem. I thought, crikey, I've been doing this since I was a teenager. Literally doing this all my adult life. And the reason that I got away with it, as in a trained life coach hadn't noticed it, was because of the way that I had explained it to myself. I thought of it like I thought of a common cold. Before COVID, if you had a bit of a sniffle or a cold that turned into a cold, you just thought, oh, whatever, it'll be gone in a couple of days, I'll work through it. You know, it's a nuisance, it's uncomfortable. Oh no, here we go again. Don't really like colds, but nobody likes colds, but you just work through it, don't you? I mean, with COVID now, we're a little bit more fearful it might be something more serious, but that's the mindset when you had a common cold. Procrastination was like, oh yeah, I'm procrastinating today. Oh, never mind. It'll be gone tomorrow. Hello. That's the procrastinator's mantra, isn't it? You know, I'll do it tomorrow. But I just used to fob it off. I just used to, like, you know, just, oh yeah, I'm procrastinating today, whatever. Never occurred to me to that moment in that coffee shop, hang on a minute. Apart from anything else, the 10 years it took to do that degree instead of 6 cost me money.
Yeah.
You know, you don't get 10 years worth of education for nothing. You know, and it's going to cost you more than it costs for 6.
Let me ask you this question here for a second. So you've mentioned what it looks like to procrastinate a little once in a while. That's like, oh, we're going to leave the dishes in the sink overnight because I'm tired. Forget about it. Right. But what does it look like to be a chronic procrastinator so that people who are listening can discern which category they are in? Like, what does it look like when you're chronically procrastinating as you describe it?
So the way I describe it, I'm thinking about people who are in a similar situation to me. They have their own lunatic looking at them in the mirror in the mornings. Who's their boss? May not be a lunatic. That might just be a Robin thing. But they are their own boss, right? They may have they've got everything they need to make their business working from home self-sufficient. Mm-hmm. So they might, for me, that's a nice coffee machine. I do love my coffee. It's a nice view from my window, live in a nice part of the world, you know, have good broadband, everything you need. But I don't have, and yet what happens is, why am I not working? What's going on? And I have guilt about that. I have feelings of, oh, gee, if only I'd started this yesterday, last week, last month, last year, last decade, I would be so much further down the road from it. A chronic procrastinator is somebody who really, really, really wants to work on something that hopefully they're passionate about. Mm-hmm. Maybe they're not passionate enough, by the way. That's a little clue to sometimes what's going on. Or maybe they just need to reconnect with their passion. But whatever it is, there's that feeling of, I really want to work. Now, I make that distinction because there's a difference between that and someone who's lazy.
Mm. Okay.
I will say that someone who's lazy, well, one person's laziness is another person's rest and relaxation. It's a very much a personal judgment thing. People can choose to be lazy because maybe in the eyes of others, or maybe they are, I'm just going to be lazy today, whatever. Mm-hmm. They're not bothered that work that they want to get done is not getting done. Whereas a chronic procrastinator is like, crikey, I really want to do this, but yet here we are again, another week gone, another month gone, another year gone, another decade gone, and I didn't get it done.
I see.
And it might just be another hour that's gone past and you didn't get it done. But that could be a critical hour. It could be something really important that you're not getting done.
So there are different versions of that sort of I have a tendency to talk about. One of those is goalnesia, which is like where you say you're going to do something. Let's tell your friends, right? Like, this week I'm going to go to the gym 3 times. And it's the end of the week and your friend says, how was the gym? And you're like, what are you talking about? It's like you have amnesia. You don't even remember setting that goal. So I feel like that's a version that sometimes people like that I will work with will describe. And the other one is what I think you're describing, which is where like you know you're supposed to do the next step, whatever it is, like send the email to the person who said they would connect you with Tony Robbins or whatever, right? And every day you're not doing it. And every day you know you're not doing it. And every day you're mad at yourself for not doing it. Is that the group of people that you're really thinking about?
Yes, and that kind of person, Goldnesia, by the way, lovely word, going to steal that. Yeah. But that is exactly the kind of thing I'm talking about. Because what happens, this is not a cost-free condition. Like, you know, you get a common cold, it goes away and you're fine. You get COVID, you could have long COVID. With chronic procrastination, you have long-term damage done by that procrastination. Mm-hmm. Goals that you didn't hit, things that you wanted to get done that didn't get done, people that you've let down, including yourself, primarily yourself, but also others around you, depending on you to deliver on what you were going to do. You didn't go to the gym for that week. You had Goldnesia about the gym. Doesn't affect your friends. But what did it do to your health? Listen, you know, I said at the beginning that, you know, I want people to have more cash, more time freedom, more cash freedom, more time freedom, more health freedom. I realized the other day, quite by accident, I wasn't really thinking about it, but I thought, actually, you know, since creating Get Resultsology, I've lost in the last year, I've lost 56 pounds in weight. For our European people, right? Yes. And for our European people, that's about 26, 27 kilos, somewhere around there. 56, 58 pounds I've lost. Now, I've made a conscious effort to do that, but the reason I've been successful with it, by the way, that's just being careful with what I eat. There's none of these fancy new drugs involved in that.
Yeah.
Was because my confidence has gone sky high, my self-belief, my self-esteem. And it's like, I looked at myself, I don't want this weight anymore. What's that doing there? Bye.
Yeah.
You know, it's gone. And so it's that.
Yeah. I feel like what you're describing is the rebuilding of self-trust. Where it's like, if I say I'm going to do something, do I believe that I will do it? Now you believe that you will do it. And so you don't have, we'll talk very soon about the third of three part person brain team or whatever you called it in your book. But I think at the core of a lot of overcoming procrastination as a character, like trait or as a real chronic problem, is so much of it is about, if I say I'm going to do something, do I believe me? It's a self-trust thing.
Yes, I guess I completely agree with you. That is a part of it. My starting point, actually, after I'd had that coffee with my brother used to be a mental health professional. My background is with Robbins, and I've studied psychology a little bit, but I'm not a trained psychologist. I'm not a scientist. I'm arts and humanities, for goodness sake. I'm useless at science. But when I was looking into it, I called him and I said, just remind me again, because I'd done the Tony Robbins stuff, which is amazing. And I've done the degree, which was amazing. And you're a mental health professional. Just remind me, what's the cure for procrastination? I seem to have slipped my mind. And I had a little mental notepad and paper there. And he went, well, absolutely. And then there was like a long pause and you could almost hear the tumbleweed. And then a sharp intake of breath and like, actually, I don't think I really know. Now, we've talked about it many times since. I don't want to put words in his mouth. He probably would know what it is now because we've talked about it so much. Mm-hmm. But that set me thinking. That really like, oh, okay. So there is no single cure for procrastination. And equally, there's no single cause. So, and not everybody struggles with chronic procrastination. You know, I gave you some startling statistics, but you've got to take into account that not everybody identifies as a procrastinator. Some people are in denial about it. I was. But other people are just like, oh, you procrastinate? Hmm. Is that a thing? Never occurs to me. And I've got some good friends like that. And I whenever they're talking about work, I lean in because I'm listening for the clues. What's going on in their mindset? Success leaves clues. And I'm trying to like, okay, what's going on? But there's a lot more going on. And so, yeah, what you're saying is absolutely true. That's one of the reasons. The other thing I touched on was you haven't found your passion. And sometimes it's things that you don't want to do that aren't passionate. If I can return like to the dishes, right? Just talk about the dishes. So in my book, I talk about how goal setting, you call it goalnesia, but as a description of one thing. But you'd think that someone who's a trained coach would be very big on goals. Well, I am. But I also don't particularly like them. I dedicate a chapter in my book to dealing with the fact how goals are not actually my favorite thing. And that's because when we look at the scientists discovered what I'd already instinctively knew, but hadn't really been able to voice out loud until I read the science, goals set up a feeling of obligation in your mind. And when there's a feeling of obligation, it triggers stress. And when you feel stressed, that's when you procrastinate. Stress is your biological response. Procrastination is your biological response to stress. So I focus more on, okay, so goals are great for milestones. What do I need to do by the end of today? What do I need to do by the end of the week? What do I need to do by the end of the month, the year, whatever. Mm-hmm. Right? But to what? And that comes down to, for lack of a better term, your personal life vision. So if you're, and in the book, I dedicate a whole chapter to getting really clear on your personal life vision. And trust me, I'm going somewhere with this with the dishes. I haven't forgotten. So let's imagine that 15 years from now, you see yourself being from a standing start, you see to where you have no qualifications in medicine today, you see yourself being a world-class oncologist in 15 years' time. Mm-hmm. I'm not in the medical field, but I believe that you can become an oncologist in 15 years. I know you've got to take 7 or 8 years in the UK. You have to, and I'm sure it's the same in America, before you can become a doctor. And then you specialize, and then you may need to do another 7 or 8 years before you are at the point where you could be classed as a good oncologist. Well, you have to have that vision. And unlike goals, which normally they are more effective when you write them down, normally, not always, but normally, your vision needs to sit here in your mind. It needs to be, you wake up with that vision in your mind in the morning, you think about it at lunchtime, you think about it when you're at work, you're thinking about it before you go to bed. Just how you see yourself, what you see yourself becoming, both as you are now. You can have a very strong vision of who you are now, which is probably absolutely wonderful. And I'm not making that up. Please be happy with who you are now, because that's all we've got. We don't know how long we've got it in the future. But have a clear idea of where you're going. And the reason that the dishes matter is because maybe the dishes are on the table in the kitchen where you need to lay out your textbooks to study for next week's exam. Okay. Or next week's essay. And the reason that you procrastinate about doing the dishes today is because you didn't connect the dots. You didn't realize if you don't clear the dishes immediately, then you won't have a work surface on which to put your textbooks. So that will be delayed, which means that your ultimate personal life vision of becoming an oncologist in 15 years' time might be endangered, might be a problem. Because you didn't wash the dishes today, like the old butterfly flapping its wings and that it's felt on the other side of the universe type thing. No, it's a very trivial point, but it makes me wash the dishes. Right? I need to clear the decks. I need some space to work. Why? Mm-hmm. Because I want to work on my great work.
Right.
And the dishes are interfering with that.
Mm-hmm. Right. How do we align what we're doing in this moment to what we're hoping to accomplish this week, which connects to our 90-day goals, which connects to our aspirations, to our vision, and then we know for sure that we're moving in the right direction, which itself provides some of what's necessary to overcome the negative response to stress that you're describing.
Yes, absolutely.
Makes a lot of sense. Yeah. So what is the, in your book that you wrote, so from reading your bio, I think you came right out with it and said that during the pandemic, you sort of dug in and wrote the book, Get Resultsology. So what would you say is sort of top line, the big takeaway? You've talked about a lot of it, but sort of the high level process for getting people out of chronic procrastination and into action.
Okay. So I wrote the book for me, right? I wanted to know the answer. And as I was writing it, I was thinking, okay, I need to translate that. I realized straight away, pretty much straight away, that all the research, by the way, there were over 900 research papers done into procrastination in one 10-year period in the early 2000s alone. One 10-year period. It's one of the most researched fields of psychology in the world. And I needed to make sense of it. And I mentioned, I'm no good at science. In fact, my last science exam at school was biology. We did biology, chemistry, physics, like everybody else, but biology. I got 9%. And I was furious. And the reason I was furious was because I went and found the teacher that marked it. And I said, why did you give me 9%? He said, what do you mean? And I said, I didn't answer any of the questions. I had no clue. Everything you taught me over the last 2 years, in one ear, out the other, can't retain it, no capacity for it. How the heck did I get 9%?
It's too
hard. And he said, yeah, I noticed you didn't answer the questions, but you spelt your name right. I felt sorry for you, so I gave you 9%. Oh, okay, that's fine. Thank you very much. I did spell my name right. I was quite pleased with that. But that's, I can't retain scientific information. And what I discovered about procrastination is that it is an inside job. We are hardwired to procrastinate. It's part of who we are. And it comes from our brain's instinctive capacity for survival. Mm-hmm. So I did have to dig into the science because I realized that there's neuroscience and psychology and biology, and they all are intrinsically hardwired into us to make us procrastinate. Some people struggle with procrastination more than others. I'll keep saying that. But for people that struggle with it a lot, it's because the survival instinct is being triggered a lot. And what I discovered, I will dip very briefly into the science, and it is a layperson's understanding, and I make no pretense otherwise. And the book is written for the layperson. I'm an arts and humanities person. How do I take this science and make this understandable, turn it into plain English so I can understand it? Mm-hmm. And if I can understand it, anybody can understand it, trust me. So I realized, so what the science said is that there's basically, there's two centers of the brain you have to be involved, have to understand. There's the limbic system, which sits right in the core of your brain. It's the oldest part of your brain in evolutionary terms. And it's where your survival instincts come from. And it's where your three behaviors come from: flight, fight, and freeze, which are your pure instinctive behavior in terms of times of stress and endangerment. You see a man-eating tiger coming at you, well, they're all man-eating if they're on the loose and they're hungry, then that's what tells you fight, flight, or freeze. And that has to be instantaneous. You can't think about it. It just happens. Well, there's a problem. Most of us don't live in a part of the world where there are man-eating tigers coming at us every day. But that part of the brain still exists. And the other thing about that part of the brain is if you think about it, your whole brain is wired to basically only do two things. One is survive, no matter what. And the other is to procreate, survival of the species. Mm-hmm. That's it. That's all we have a brain for. The rest of it, our lives, is all about surviving and procreating. That's it. That's why we're on this planet in biological terms. I'm not going to get into the esoteric spiritual reasons. That's a different conversation. But if you think about it, we don't have tigers coming at us, but we do have tax people, mm-hmm. landlords, bosses, utility bills, bad health, bad news about someone else's health, relationship issues. Anything that stresses you out triggers the limbic system. You get into, I'm going to fight this, or I'm going to freeze, I don't know what to do, or I'm going to run away from it, because all of those things are wired into us, and it can literally be you open an email that's got bad news into it, and suddenly what we call the threat modality is triggered. Mm-hmm. But the other part of the brain up here at the front is prefrontal cortex. Now, the prefrontal cortex, if you're under 25, it's very frustrating because it's not fully formed until you're around 25, which there's a couple of reasons why students are the most researched area of procrastination in the world. The first is where do all the researchers hang out? Universities, who goes to university students. So that's why they get research more than anybody else. But the other reason is because they are the largest group of people in the world, all in one place that the researchers can do, but also their prefrontal cortex is not yet fully formed. And so procrastination for them is a bigger issue than for the rest of us. Not for all of them, but for more of them than later people of the later years. And the prefrontal cortex is a younger part of the brain development-wise. And in the prefrontal cortex, you have what they call reward modality. And when you get up into the prefrontal cortex, you are much more capable of rational thinking, planning out your life, thinking about things in cold, calculated, logical ways about what you want to get done with your day. The instinctive side is parked. It's always available to us, and it's available to us instantly, in a heartbeat. The prefrontal cortex is, you have to warm it up. You have to get it going. And that's what I started to cover in the book. That's what I do cover in the book. Do you want me to go into that?
Anything you like. I would like to hear how it has impacted you to have learned all of this. Like, how has your life changed once you got into the place where you were sort of, you had learned about the two parts of the brain and I assume you have some strategies for calming your limbic system and activating your prefrontal cortex, but how has it impacted you?
So the way I laid out the book is the answer to your question. So the first thing was, the book is divided into three sections. The first one is understanding. And the reason that you need to understand this is, like, I'm teaching myself initially how to fish. rather than just being given the fish. I've been given the fish 100 times. If my brother had said to me, oh yeah, the cure for procrastination is blah, 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 it wouldn't have helped because I didn't understand enough about what that really meant. Mm. Now I understand it's coming from my brain. Now I understand it's hardwired. Okay, two things. First, how it has changed my life is I now know when I'm procrastinating that I'm procrastinating.
Ah.
Mm-hmm. Right? Yes. Now think about this. You know, if you get to the end of the year and you've run out of money, you can make more money. There is an infinite supply of money. It's right. not real. We know that. But there is an infinite supply of money. You can always make more money. It's just a question. Now, I'm not going to get into how, because that's a different question, but you can always make more money. But if you get to the year and you've procrastinated through that year, that's time spent. Time. Yeah. You can't get it back.
Mm-hmm.
It's impossible. It's finite. And you don't know how much you've got in future, but you do know that what you've used up has gone.
Yeah.
So, and with procrastination, if you catch it as you are doing it or about to do it, as opposed to thinking, oh, if only I hadn't procrastinated last week, last month, last year, you got a chance to do something about it. So the second section of the book is a carefully selected, what we call in Britain, a pick and mix selection, a toolbox of strategies, because no single strategy works for the same two people the same way. We're all different. We all procrastinate for very slightly different reasons, sometimes dramatically different reasons. There are very distinct personality types that procrastinate for very different reasons. I cover that in the book. But you need strategies, and you need to find the strategies that work best for you, and you need to start using them as soon as you've noticed you're procrastinating. So I do that now. I'm like, okay, I'm procrastinating right now. Okay, I better do something about it. A, I better stop. Just stop it.
Mm-hmm.
And B, I better, you know, if I need to, I've got some strategies that I use on myself.
Mm-hmm. What's a strategy to use on yourself?
Well, the first strategy is that is a strategy by itself, noticing that I'm doing it. The second strategy is the easiest thing in the world is, well, I don't really want to do this. I don't really want to do this. I'll just do it for 5 minutes, see what happens. Oh, after five, actually, that was easier than I thought it was going to be. Maybe I could do 10. Maybe I could do 20. Maybe I could do an hour. I could do a couple of hours. But the other thing is set yourself up for success by having a more strategically laid out day, having a routines.
Mm-hmm.
And systems planned in advance so that things are pre-decided. You don't get stressed about, oh gosh, I don't know what I'm going to do now. You're just like, oh yeah, actually, I've already decided yesterday or the day before or on Sunday when I did my weekly plan, this is what I'm doing. And so it just becomes easier, less stressful, less anxiety inducing. So a combination of those things are what I do.
Mm-hmm.
I've got nearly 100, I've recorded over 100 of Goalbusters podcasts, and Everybody gets asked the same question in there. How do you, you know, what productivity tips do you have? And there's quite a lot of common themes, but everything that they've mentioned so far is covered in my book in one way or the other. And I'm not bragging about that. I'm just pointing out that everybody knows the answers if they think about it. They know what to do to get themselves more productive. So that's the second thing. And then the third thing in the book after, which I realized was really well covered in the world of, because if you Google productivity and procrastination, other search engines are available, you will discover that there are millions of results. Mm-hmm. A lot of them, by the way, are wrong, which is what I found really struggle. That's what I struggled with to begin with, because I need to cut through this, cut through the noise, get to the stuff that really works. A lot of them are right, but how do you know the difference unless you've studied it a little bit? So that's the point of my book, is I've done that so that someone else can just read it and they know that it's been researched. But that's about motivation. We talk about, well, how do you get more productive? How do you motivate yourself? Mm-hmm. So, you know, for me, it is about having more money, more time, more health.
Mm-hmm.
But how do I motivate myself today? And there are formulas in the book, which from other people have come up with, very clever people, and I talk about those. But there's another M. There's M for motivation, but then there's a bigger M in my book, and that's M for momentum. Mm-hmm. That's the third part of the book. Because I've got behind me, I have a cupboard full of planners and schedulers and journals written by the most spectacularly brilliant people. And they are wonderful. Some of them are wonderful. Some of them a bit weird, but most of them are wonderful. And they're in the cupboard for a reason, which is they all worked for a while. Some of them worked for a long while, but they don't work for me anymore. They're in the cupboard. I didn't consciously say, right, I'm putting you down now. I just realized I don't use them anymore. Mm-hmm. And I lost momentum and went back to the old habits of procrastination. So the third section deals with how do we get the momentum going so that we can do this month in, month out, year in, year out, for as long as we want to, not until the momentum wears off. And so I deal with that. That's the third section. And that's when I discovered one of the biggest things that research kept pointing out was it's not the only thing you can do. You can do an awful lot for yourself, a hell of a lot for yourself. But I discovered that external accountability, that's what I was doing with my clients. They were getting 80% of their results from the 20% of the call that was about accountability.
Yeah.
So I thought, oh, I can do that. In fact, that's how I can really serve. Writing the book, you know, is one way that I can serve. Another way is for people that really want what we call the belt and braces approach to hold their pants up, or trousers, as we call them here, to make sure that they're going to get that momentum. External accountability. That's, by the way, the one thing that I realized I can't recreate in my home-based business. I can make fantastic coffee. My coffee is, I'm modest about it, but it's gorgeous. I make really good coffee, but I can't recreate external accountability by myself, by definition.
You need a community.
You need someone else to hold you accountable.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. And I think that's one of the main things that I've been talking about a lot since the second edition of Great Work came out, because that chapter was about community and collaboration, and you can't do it by yourself. We lone wolves, we can do our best to do every single thing ourselves, and we will be totally maxed out and probably pretty exhausted. But there are some things that, you know, if we do more things with more people, we will be feeling a lot better. But this piece, as you've pointed out, you have to have other people to remind you, to support you, to point out what you've forgotten. So I totally agree with that. And I have to assume that you've written this book, which did not take you 10 years or even 6 years, because now it's 2025 and I think it's been out for a while. So you wrote a book fairly quickly and you did a lot of research on it. So it seems like your own strategies have worked pretty well for you.
I didn't write it that quickly, actually. Yeah. No, I didn't procrastinate about it. I will say that. I actually, one of the sections in the book I talk about is one of the common features of someone who procrastinates a lot is a lack of self-confidence. Uh-huh. And it's a vicious cycle. If you don't do what you wanted to do today, then you beat yourself up about it. And then the next day you feel bad.
Self-trust again.
Confidence goes down and down, and your self-esteem goes down as well. For some, not everyone, but that is a common feature of people who procrastinate. But the opposite side of that is overconfidence. So actually, the book's only been out since April.
Really?
Yes.
Congratulations.
Yeah, April the 22nd, we finally launched it.
Congrats.
But I spent 3 years researching it and then 2 years refining it. I created a course around it, audiobook, everything else. And finally going through hundreds of drafts. It feels like thousands.
Does.
And struggling. I'm not an author by profession. It's my first book.
Uh-huh.
And my son has a master's in writing. So he became my editor and also my illustrator.
That's great.
And he used to sit down with me and say, Dad, we'd look at it and say, what's this paragraph mean? Oh, you know, it, and I'd look at it and read it and I go, yeah, probably just cut that out. I've no idea what I'm trying to say there. And I called these things my word salad. So that takes a while. But actually, the thing I was saying was that about the opposite of low confidence is overconfidence.
Yeah.
So when I first started studying procrastination and productivity, I realized that, you know, because of my background in coaching, because I'd done a lot of stuff with Tony, I knew exactly what I was looking for. I knew exactly what was going to work and what wasn't going to work. And it was a journey of discovery. I learned some things that were counterintuitive in the research. And I'm like, really? Okay, that's interesting. And they've gone in the book. And I learned some facts and figures. Like I talk about how, I mean, if you go to a lot of accountability coaches' pages, I've looked at loads over the years and they're 95% productivity improvement rate. I don't know where they get that from. There's no evidence for proof for that. Maybe from their own clients. That might be true, but they're not saying it's from their own clients. They're saying the research shows it. No, the research doesn't. The research points at 33%. And I can cite you the exact paper that studied that came up with that in 2007. 33% more goals achieved every single month. And I think, actually, you know what? That's better than 95% because it's believable, it's doable, and it's proven.
Yeah.
And if you do it 33% more things every single month achieved, probably in the same time, not more time, multiply that by 12 months, the exponential increase in your cash freedom, your time freedom, and possibly your health freedom. In my case, you know, 56, 58 pound weight loss. Yeah, that's huge, right? So I did all of that. But yeah, overconfidence was a big thing. So yeah, I'm sorry, what was the question?
I'm excited that your book is out. I'm glad that it, I mean, what an accomplishment that to get a book all the way through the 1,000 drafts and have it page formatted out in the world. And is it available globally on Amazon? Can I put a link to Amazon so people can get it?
Yeah, absolutely. And I got I was very excited. I got an email the other day. In England, it's actually the law. They weren't like honoring me or anything, but it's actually the law that published books have to be placed in the British Library.
Oh, fancy.
So like, ooh, you know, I'm a published author now. And we did it properly. You can get books that are published that use Amazon's internal network. But I went, no, I want this available so that, whether Amazon's here or not, it'll always be out there. So yeah, it is available on Amazon.
Okay.
You can buy it. There's a Kindle version. By the way, this is the actual physical book. This is not a lightweight 200 words in 300 pages. This is a proper book. It's a proper book, but it is written. I promise you, it's written in plain English. It is available at an audio book as well, which I do online. I don't do it via Amazon, but I will say to you, and you and I have discussed this beforehand. Listen, I'm not daft. I understand that people may or may not buy it. I don't want to do a thing. A feature of the book, something I talk about in the preface of the book, is a Japanese word, sunduku. And sunduku means someone who buys books for their own self-development and then just ends up leaving them on the coffee table or on the bookshelf and they never read them. And that's actually a Japanese word, sunduku, for that. And I'm aware of that. So I want to find ways of getting this book into people's hands, and I don't care whether they pay for it or not. I'm prepared to give it away. So I can't give away the printed book because I'm not made of money, but I do give away the book unabridged as a free PDF.
On your website?
On my website. And actually, a really easy way to find it is, and an easy to remember domain is reallyusefultips.com.
Reallyusefultips.com.
So I really mean it. You can get it for free. It's useful and it's full of tips.
Really useful tips. Well, that's great. So I will put reallyusefultips.com in the show notes as well as get resources. Yes.
And if I've got time, can I just mention also for people who are very visual, I just want to get a flavor of what's in there because we've not had time to talk about the inner productivity team, for example, which is how you overcome procrastination. That's actually the meat and potatoes of how you do it, how you actually do it in your mind, how you get yourself really wired. You can do a little 5-day challenge called skyrocketyourproductivitychallenge.com. Also free.
Okay.
It's only 10 minutes a day. And it covers some of the key elements of the book very quickly for people that just want to get a flavor of it.
That's great. I'll put that link to that too as well, because I feel like that 10 minutes a day, people love stuff like that. Little productivity tip.
Absolutely.
That sounds great. So I'll put all of those links in. And then is that how you would like people to follow up with you? Try download the book, get the do the course, something. So are those the first steps to get to know you better?
Well, people are welcome to contact me direct. I hang out on LinkedIn. I've been known to be in there. Up Robin J. Emden on LinkedIn. I'm the only Robin J. Emden in the world. There aren't many Emdens around. There are a few of us, but not many. But Robin J. Emden, I'm the only one. Also, if you want to know more about my coaching, I do recommend that you are at least familiar with the book and maybe have done the Skyrocket Your Productivity Challenge. But you can reach me on easy way to reach me is bookachatwithrobin.com. And that actually doesn't book you in straight away. It's not a free coaching session. It actually tells you about the accountability coaching side of my business. But it's a good idea to have some idea of what the book is about, because that's an integral part of me helping you to be long-term productive. And it'll give you a better idea, a flavor of what I do a thing called laser-focused accountability coaching.
Mm-hmm.
And there's that bookachatwithrobin.com. You can go and read about that. But I don't assume everybody will want to do that. I do assume that the free book must
free
be a
book,
good thing.
Free challenge.
Free book. And you will find that you may never need to speak to me. The only thing I would say is in the end of chapter one, there's a form they can fill in that's a pledge. That they're going to read the book and do the exercises. And it's a pledge for themselves. But if they want to email me that at mypledge@getresultsology.com, I read every email, I reply to every email, and I would be delighted to receive that as the way of them making a statement. Because you make the point about people and community. You can't do this with AI, folks, because it doesn't care. It's not real.
Right.
And you don't care because you know it's not real. But when it's people replying to you, actual physical people, that makes a difference. That's also in our brain. We are hardwired to be a social creature. That's who we are. That's just how we're wired.
Yeah, so true. Well, Robin, thank you so much for your time. I really appreciate it. I'm looking forward to people reading your book and taking that challenge. I think that you can help a lot of people. We appreciate you coming and sharing your perspective with us.
You're very welcome. It's been my pleasure. Thank you for giving me the opportunity.
Absolutely.
Thanks for listening to Unleashing Your Great Work. If this episode sparked something for you, you'll love the Great Work audiobook, narrated by me, and now available on Audible. It's the perfect way to go deeper while you walk, drive, or just take a breath. Search Great Work by Amanda Crowell on Audible, or grab the link from the show notes below. And if you're enjoying this show, follow it, rate it, and review it. It really helps more people find their great work.